Evening, buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Hello, passengers, and welcome aboard the TV Pilot's License with service to White Collar and the FBI's White Collar Crime Unit. We ask that you please fasten your headphones, secure your podcasting device, and remember that, hey, you, gentlemen, just remember, if you shave off that goatee, that beard, that mustache, you might not be guaranteed to look like Matt Bomer, but we recommend you try just to see. Who knows what will happen?
Welcome to the TV Pilot's License. My name is Jeff Kurbis, joined by Rich Inman and Max Singer. How are you boys doing today?
$700 a month for an apartment in New York City, and I know this is a TV show.
Oh my God, we're going to talk about that in depth.
Oh, Rich, we're doing Friends again?
Well, gentlemen, this week we are going to be talking about USA's White Collar. Just to clear up some misinformation at the front and at the top, we are only watched part one of this mini movie of a pilot. So if you are following along with us, just watch that part one that you find on Hulu. And hey, if you like it enough, you're allowed to watch part two. But we're going to just tell you our thoughts on in the meantime. But
yeah,
Max,
USA 250 is actually their pilot strategy. 250 minutes, baby.
Max, for folks who maybe are here because they're big fans of White Collar and want to hear our opinions, maybe they're frequent flyers. What is this podcast all about?
Here at TV Pilot's License, we break down and analyze the pilot episodes of some of TV's most famous, or in some cases, infamous shows. We learn more about how these shows came to be, were originally made, if they're effective pilot episodes, and making us want to watch more if they can be made today. Go back and stream our old episodes from wherever you listen to podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok to see our smiling faces. And if it is your first time flying with us, then welcome aboard.
Now, gentlemen, I guess I have another question for you. What is your familiarity with White Collar? Because we've done USA pilots, right? We've done the hour and 45 minute that TV or the 2 hour pilot. That's an hour 45 of actual watch time. Did you actually watch this show when it was on the air?
This has to be a Peter Inman TV show. This is not me, baby. I am not watching USA original crime procedurals except for Monk.
Oh, Matt Bomer, detective solving crimes. I think we're talking about the classic The Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. I've actually not seen this show before. This is my first experience with it. Matt Bomer is incredibly dreamy. I'm excited to talk about, you know, looking at him for 45 minutes.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to, specifically, it's in our show notes. I want to talk about Matt Bomer and, you know, a little bit more about why his look might be something that is impacting us today, you know, 13 plus years later after this show is off the air. But before we do so, before we dive into White Collar, a quick word from our sponsors.
Evening, buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Let's dive in to the world of Neil McCaffrey and White Collar. And we're going to start off with...
Yeah, jail.
Just Caffrey. I don't know where you're getting the McCaffrey from, Jeff.
Neil Caffrey. Excuse me. I am thinking of fantasy football right now, and I am so sorry. A quick synopsis. A White Collar criminal agrees to help the FBI catch other White Collar criminals, using his expertise as an art and securities thief, counterfeiter, and common man. Well, all right. That seems interesting. But Max, can you tell us a little bit more about how this show got made?
Today, we are talking about the pilot episode of White Collar, which originally aired on October 23rd, 2009 on USA. And as Jeff said up top, when this episode originally premiered on USA, it was a 90-minute TV movie. For streaming and DVD releases, it's been subsequently broken up into two parts. We'll be talking about part one of today's pilot. We'll be talking about the show's creator, Jeff Easton, a little bit more. Easton first makes it big, penning the 1999 comedy Held Up, starring Jamie Foxx and Nia Long. Originally titled Inconvenience, the film was set to star Rob Schneider and Lisa Kudrow before Schneider dropped out 4 days before filming. He was replaced with Robert Downey Jr., and although the film fell apart, I cannot think of three more different people to lead a film. I tell you all this to say it has a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes.
There is a point in time where Robert Downey Jr. and Rob Schneider were up for similar roles, like the same role.
I mean, this is when you couldn't insure RDJ.
Yeah, I'm also...
Oh, man, okay.
I'm thinking of a world where Rob Schneider's The Animal is starring Robert Downey Jr., and now that's all that I want. I want just the universe where Robert Downey Jr. has Rob Schneider's career.
Oh, well, unfortunately for you, Jeff, that does mean Rob Schneider Iron Man.
You know what?
How much do you like it now?
20 the project times more fell interesting. Apart.
Rob dropped out. I don't know what to do. I guess we have to get Jamie Foxx. What are we gonna do?
two of our best prominent black actors, Robert Downey Jr. and Jamie Foxx.
Don't worry. Easton goes on to create the UPN series Shots of McNasty.
Oh no.
Hold on, we got to talk about Shasta McNasty.
Wait,
a comedy
what?
About a comedy about three slackers in a rock band who neglect their music, instead spending time at Venice Beach, chasing dates, messing with the pizza guy, and embracing mediocrity. The show lasted one season, but was nominated for Best New Comedy at the People's Choice Awards.
And I can't wait to do it in 1 month on this podcast.
In 2004, that show starred
Jake Busey, who I am currently Googling if that's Gary Busey's son, and it is.
Is he Shasta McNasty?
Boy, inconclusive.
In 2004, Easton created the Hawaii Five-0 knockoff Hawaii for NBC, following a cop from Chicago who transfers to a precinct in Honolulu. It lasted just 8 episodes. According to Easton, the earliest seeds of White Collar began in his hot tub with the idea of doing a buddy cop version of The Shield. That's a real quote from Easton. While that show focused on the streets, Easton saw White Collar crime as a vessel for more opulent storylines. That would evolve into the story of a criminal released from prison to help solve these crimes, but was shelved at NBC due to similarities to another show called Life. Retooled and envisioned as more comedic, a new pitch was delivered, and the show was given a casting contingent pilot order by USA Network. After seeing more than 300 actors for the role of Neil Caffrey, Matt Bomer was the first person to join the cast, and the casting contingency was lifted by the network. Ironically, Bernie Madoff would be arrested for financial white-collar crimes while the show was filming its pilot episode in New York City.
Oh man, accidental topicality, I love it.
Today's pilot is directed by Bronwyn Hughes, best known for her work on the films Harriet the Spy and Forces of Nature, as well as a reoccurring director on the series The L Word.
Okay, how many mirrors and car keys are strewn about Jake Easton's hot tub? Because no one publicly comes out that it's a hot tub idea unless they are really proud of it.
I'm sorry, but there's such a stereotype of like the young hotshot 90s action director, like guys like Easton, or I think of Shane Black, where it's like Entourage is a documentary, Entourage is a mirror. It is looking at this type of Hollywood bro who thinks that nothing could be more significant to the landscape and the culture than Shasta McNasty.
I just think, Rich, I'm going on the other side of what this hot tub is. I think he went to the Playboy Mansion once and was like, I got to get a grotto. I got to get a grotto in my backyard. And it is the saddest version of that grotto. But I want to bring us into something that is a little bit like a grotto, like a prison cell bathroom. And gentlemen, I have a question for you. And this is a little bit of a quiz. This pilot is contingent on the first bit of it just being us watching a very handsome Matt Bomer break out of prison. But here's my question for you.
Yeah.
How long does this pilot take before we hear our first line of dialogue? Take a guess for me. Take a guess because
I'm normally so good at spotting this. Damn.
I timed it out and I was floored when I saw how long in this version of the pilot, right? We're talking about the 45 minutes that we got of TV. How long do you think it took?
I'm going 6 minutes.
I'm trying to think here because we don't even because
it's all prison break to start.
No, different pilot.
Yeah, go for it, Max.
No, prison breaks in Virginia. Well, not even dialogue. We don't even have a score until he's out of prison. It is just room tone and toilet flushing and water running until he's out of the building itself. I'm going to say 8.5 minutes before a line of dialogue is actually spoken.
It is 5 minutes and 13
Ooh.
Seconds.
Ooh,
exactly.
Good job, Rich.
Yeah, thank you so much.
5 minutes and 13 seconds exactly. And guess who says the first line of dialogue? It's the guy selling the jacket on the street. It is not even our protagonist in this show.
And well, hold on. That guy might come back as a protagonist. We don't know.
That guy might be really critical to this show.
So the first thing Matt Bomer says is $3?
Yes, that is correct. That is the first line of dialogue in this entire show.
By a series regular.
And that was the audition scene.
Yeah, exactly. That was his monologue. He came into the room. He said $3. And then he left.
$3.
And he showed his hands. He showed his front and his back. And he was like, $3. And then he left. And people were like, was I just solicited? Or was I? But I'm curious for the two of you. There's two questions that I have. One is a little bit more of a serious question, which is that much silence. Were you engaged with this prison break scene of seeing Neil break out of an institution and actually seeing it from like soup to nuts of how he did it? Or were you already like, what the fuck am I watching? And is this a silent film?
I was really impressed by how much all the prisoners recognized him immediately and did not say anything. That was some good solidarity by the people in that prison.
Really,
because he could have easily gotten given away.
Yeah, the snitches get stitches mentality of it.
Yeah, that's what USA is all about.
I think this montage of him glowing up and making himself over is so funny, though, where he goes from having like mild, tamed scruff to shaving and just being the most handsome man you've ever seen. In one scene, he has this what I think is a terrible wig on, and they cut away, and now his hair is perfectly coiffed. Listen, I can forgive the perfect smooth shave with the janky razor blade and him not being covered in bits of toilet paper. I draw the line at his hair being perfectly coiffed and held up.
it definitely does. There is a level of suspension of disbelief and just handsomeness of like, well, right. Matt Bomer is that handsome. I would also be distracted by him if he was breaking out of prison and being like, well, that guy's too handsome to be a criminal.
I had the exact same thought. They're not looking at him because they recognize him. They're like, who is that?
Yeah. They're like, oh, baby.
God damn. You know, normally I don't look at guys like that, but I might be changing my opinion. Like,
I will say it is so much of this entire pilot hinges on Matt Bomer being undeniably attractive to everyone
and charming. It is, how charming can he be? How handsome can he be? And also, oh, by the way, he's a triple threat. He knows everything about everything. Like, that is that is how this pilot is set up.
He's a sexy computer.
It is like, hey, you want to hate yourself? Boy, turn on White Collar and you're going to meet Neil and you're going to think, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
I love how there was like, at no point any of the guards at this maximum security prison that were like, hey, that guy who looks like an LA 10 is gone. You know, the guy who looks like, hey, have you seen a guy who like only looks like a male model leaving the prison?
Did you see that guy who was on the cover of GQ last month? He just like walked by. And, like, I'm really confused. But gentlemen, I said I had two questions for you. The second question is, you know, while Neil is breaking out of prison, we see him hot jump a car in this instance. And he finds a cassette tape and he puts it on. And what did you want to be on that cassette tape? Because they made some choices in the show as far as the music, as far as the score, all that fun stuff. But I'm genuinely curious I have what I think is the only correct answer. But Rich, what is your answer?
I've got two, and I've got one that's very specific to what's happening, and that's Jailbreak by Thin Lizzy.
Okay,
one of their best songs. The second one is Radar Love. I think that's just like a good driving down the highway song. I don't think it fits the pilot very well, but I just want to hear him drive. I just want to see him drive to Radar Love.
Max, what about you?
We should say for the folks at home, the song on the cassette is actually Hold Up, I'm Coming by Sam and Dave, the blues duo. I would say my serious answer is Highway Star by Deep Purple. Nice. And my really serious answer is Crazy Frog by Axl F.
And my only answer is Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba is the only correct answer.
Yeah, okay.
Come on. I get knocked down and I get up again.
And he really did.
Can you imagine a cassette single of Crazy Frog, though? A song that's only meant to be consumed on a flip phone?
I don't know why you're making me do this right now, but I'm literally going to find you a cassette of Crazy Frog.
Please don't.
It's already in the mail.
I'm begging you.
While we're seeing Neil Caffrey break out of prison and, you know, this plan develop of not only getting out of prison, getting this jacket, going to the airport, stealing a person's car, while he already had a car, we're introduced to another character, our counterpart in this instance, of Peter Burke, who is our Fed safecracking. And I guess I'm curious, do we think in this instance that Peter Burke seems like a equal adversary, maybe even good at his job? Or are you sort of like, oh, this doofus? Max, what are you thinking at first meeting this other character?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure if I think of him as a formidable adversary. I do like when they have like feds and cop characters just dramatically say the name of a bad guy they're chasing as if we're supposed to know everything about them. Like when you say something like, the Dutchman, like am I supposed to be bought into that?
I know.
Am I supposed to care about the Dutchman already?
I know. It's kind of like it gave me the same kind of like eye roll as like watching season whatever, like 8 of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where they're like, you can't have another Greenpoint Strangler. It can't be the 7th Greenpoint Strangler. You can't. But I do know exactly what you're talking about in the sense that like this is, if you're setting this up to be two genius adversaries against each other, it's just going to be a competency porn type of pilot. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But you better really keep your audience guessing. You have to like really stay a couple like punches ahead of them.
Well, we do get a scene that I am calling the seeing that both people are good at their jobs scene, which is when Peter Burke is brought into this prison to be able to understand how did Neil break out. And we almost get to see one, Peter put the pieces together as an investigator, but also see how Neil did this entire thing and what was the plan and those sort of things. I really enjoyed that as a getting, like, seeing someone be good at their job, developing mm-hmm. that trust in the characters. And Rich, you always talk about how that's a critical part of pilots. Do you think that did a good job of maybe getting that buy-in of what you needed to say, all right, Cool. Two competent people.
I mean, I feel like I'm skipping ahead too far to like my wait a minute moment notice notes of just like I feel like overall what this is trying to accomplish with the competency aspect of it is a little bit too much like tell and don't show. And it's like you get a bit of the competency from Matt Bomer's character for breaking out of jail, but not a whole bunch else from the duo itself. It's a lot of talking. It's a lot of Burke getting really upset at other FBI agents that, you know, to show that he's in charge. But it's not like enough of like a chess match for me.
Max,
Burke also feels like a composite of every 90s action character where like they say things to Burke like, yeah, but you're the only guy who's ever caught Caffrey before. And it's kind of like a reverse The Rock, the Michael Bay movie, where they're like, and Mace is the only guy who's ever broke out of Alcatraz before. Like, we have to get him. And it's like, no, we need Burke on the case because he's the only one who knows how to get this prisoner. He's the only person who can foil him. And that singularity that you are so important, you are so noble to this cause, that feels like such a silly, like, comfort food mm-hmm. action trope to me, but distilled into a way that is like a little more palatable for like a family-centric USA audience, if that makes sense.
I think where this pilot, I think the there are precedents and comparisons to this pilot that are so good and so highly regarded that I feel like it kind of does a disservice to this pilot itself. Like, cause I'm thinking immediately of Catch Me If You Can. I'm comparing it to when we did The Blacklist, which is very like, oh, James Spader's 17
yeah, which
moves
came
ahead
after
of the
this
CIA.
Pilot.
Like, yeah, it is.
Even a Silence of the Lambs, even the relationship between Clarice Starling and Hannibal Lecter and the way that yeah. you have this, like they lead on each other, but they're also adversaries, and how like one is helping the other, even if they don't understand how they're being helped in time.
Yeah. And I think like if anyone who's a writer is listening to this, like if you're writing a character who is a genius, you don't necessarily have to be a genius yourself. You just have to be studied, and you have to like keep throwing roadblocks for your and red herrings at your audience. That's basically all you have to do. But you do have to like prove that they can break through those in a way that the audience doesn't expect. And I mean, I literally wrote at some I wrote at 28 minutes into this pilot, I have seen every move of this pilot telegraphed already. Like I knew what was coming. I knew it was coming. So it never really felt as though this pilot kept me guessing in the same way that The Blacklist did.
Sure. I guess a question for you, because we have two things happen after we see this jail scene. We understand that, one, we're going to be, Neil and Peter are going to be meeting up, mm-hmm. and Neil's going to get captured and put back in prison. But then we get why is today different, right? We get our second why is today different, which is this proposal of Neil pitching, let me be on work release. Yeah. Let me help you because I know
which is like
how
catch
the bad
me if
guys
can.
Think. Yeah, very, very catch me
and
if
the Blacklist.
You can. The end of the last 3 minutes of Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Well, I think with like Catch Me If You Can, that's very similar to The Fugitive too, where it's like they are adversaries. They are trying to catch this person, but there is a camaraderie. If they can, there's like a
very
friendization,
important.
There's a camaraderie between them. And even though they are rivals and they have an end game, there's a little bit of a respect factor in there. This is very much like, I need you to help me catch someone named the Dutchman whose motives are unclear at this time.
And yeah, the motives are unclear, and I guarantee you they're just calling him that because he's Dutch. There's nothing more than that.
Well, two things. One is we do find out why they call him the Dutchman, and it is not because of
no, he's
the
Dutch.
Fact that he was Dutch. It was the fact that they named him after a ship. And then second, you know, after not necessarily saying like, hey, I absolutely agree, Were you guys surprised to see Tiffany Thiessen in this pilot at all? Because I think it is one of those where it's just like, all right, there's a guy, there's his main character, and then there's the star of Saved by the Bell, Tiffany Thiessen.
That's right. It's a USA pilot, baby. You're going to get one recognizable face total.
Max, what did you think of this character?
If you were a teen...
Oh, go for it. Go ahead.
I'll say, if you're, you know, a teen star in the 90s, you're going to make your way into USA Network. We get her. We also get a very young Alexandra Daddario in this as well. This is just a very, even with Matt Bowman, this is a very strong brunette cast. There's a lot of great heads of brunette hair on beautiful people in this ensemble.
That's how they sold the pilot. Brunettes
welcome.
Do you like male brunettes? Do you like female brunettes? Then boy, do I have the show for you in all shapes and in sizes. But, you know, after this scene, I want to talk a little bit about the idea of seeing Neil be a con man, right? Because we see it in the beginning in breaking out of prison, but we get a second instance of this in seeing Neil be put in a $700 apartment. And Max, I guess I have a question for you as our tri-state representative of the Northeast. If I said that you could live in New York for $700, was it a week or was it a month? would you take me up on that regardless of the quality of the living facilities?
I mean, listen, there's a big difference between can I sublet a room in your place and what I believe is like transitional housing or like a halfway house that he's going to be moving into instead. Big difference there. But yes.
The ankle monitor in.
The line of if you could find something better for $700 a month, you could do it. I instantly clocked that as, okay, we are going to see how Neil games the system. We're going to see how he finds a loophole in Burke's logic. And I was very entranced by seeing how we watch him play the game. It is fun when you see Caffrey be the Frank Abagnale Jr., when you see him doing the Catch Me If You Can ruse, when you see him embodying this character of sorts.
And let's get into that, because I love this scene of him going to the thrift shop and essentially, like, kind of, I don't know, how do you, like, honey trapping this old lady who's, like, dropping off her old, her late husband's old clothes where she just happened to have played poker with the Rat Pack, just ran into one woman at a thrift store.
Well, it is interesting because, right, there is something to be said and potentially debate of, was he honey trapping her or was he just like, oh shit, this is the nicest stuff here and I need to get my hands on it.
Right.
Also, it's that idea of like seeing the adult version of if you give a mouse a cookie. Right. Like, because at first he's like, cool. Oh, shit. Those suits. I love that. And then he sees the name in the suit and he's like, oh, fuck. It's a DeVore. Like, shit. This woman must know someone. And then, oh, if you get he got that cookie and then he's like, is there a glass of milk there? Can I get that glass of milk? And the glass of milk happens to be a guest house in this at least $30 million townhouse in New York City.
And of course the dead husband's jacket is your exact suit size. Why wouldn't it be?
And of course the woman that you're staying with has a smoking hot 22-year-old granddaughter who has a slow-mo scene that came out of nowhere and I have so many questions.
I was going to say, you want to know what the most this was pitched in a hot tub moment? Moment is it's when the smoking hot 20-year-old granddaughter enters the frame for the first time in slow motion walking in what, like a silk bathrobe?
Yeah, basically they were like, hey, show up in the least amount of clothes you're comfortable with, and she's like, gotcha, bet. And then she just walked into the room and they were like, perfect. And Jeff was sitting in the hot tub when he was directing this entire scene.
Now we all know from his personal life following this show and the show he did most recently with Nathan Lane that Matt Bomer's a gay man. Having him play a cunning Lothario for women, but also immediately before that, him trying on a bunch of hats was was a little bit of a, oh, you're doing a little bit too much here.
Rich, I thank you for introducing my wait a minute moment that is not actual wait a minute moment, which is the damage this show did for making a generation of men think I too can pull off a fedora. Because the moment Matt Bomer puts on that fucking fedora, I was like, shit, we had Amazon at this time and hundreds of thousands of people just clicked add to cart and said, that's a smooth looking look. Yeah. I'm going to absolutely rock that fedora just as much as the man who looks maxing is based off of Matt Bomer. And your dumbass sitting at home thought, you know what? I also can pull off that hat that looks good on no one other than Matt Bomer. You dumb fucking idiot.
Guys, I am sorry though. Like, there are safe cracking explosions happening.
You're right.
Big pinstripe 90s suits with fedora hats.
That's page seven, baby.
They're slow motion broads. They're stacked brunettes. This wants to be a coked out 90s action thriller.
Oh, so bad.
This wants to be a 90 minute on the nose, cokey, insane action classic, and somehow it got stuck on USA Network.
Matt Bomer wearing hats. That's the front page headline.
So, genuine question. Do you think Jeff Easton tried to pitch this to HBO? And, like, what this would have looked like if it was on HBO? There'd be...
Rich,
you and sigh, but I think it would have been one of the greatest, like, we would have been watching that every week in the fraternity house, 100%. We would have been watching with our jaws wide open, being like, oh, yay. you do it.
Who is this man? He's grinding his teeth. Jake Busey is here. He keeps shouting Matt Bomer wearing hats at me. What does that mean?
Oh, nothing strikes fear into the soul as much as Jake Busey is here.
So there's two final really scenes that we get after seeing, you know, the idea of the, well, one thing before I talk about our last two scenes, what did you think of seeing the show seems to like focus in on the concept of fairness, if that makes sense, especially coming from Peter's character, where like, you can tell there's like this little spat where he's just like, this is bullshit. This isn't fair sort of thing. Like almost like a little petulant child who works for the government. And I'm curious, Max, like, did you think that was necessary here to have a man just be so upset? Like this fully grown man being upset, goggling at this 22-year-old, drinking this perfect cup of coffee and then yelling at Matt Bomer? Or were you sort of like, I could have done without?
No, I think it's essential. I think it's very much, we keep going back to this, it's the catch if you can relationship. It's the stiff, hard line, follow the rules agent, and the young, hotshot con man who keeps finding ways to get around these parameters. And so I think, you know, Burke is angry that it's day one and you have found so many loopholes in my plan of, you have $700 a month. There's a thrift shop down the street for your clothes, and you can't go without, like, with, you have to stay within 2 miles of this ankle monitor point. And Neil's found every way to get around it while also doing jobs that the FBI has not been able to crack. He's identifying fibers on jackets. He's getting them leads in cases that are nowhere. And he is absolutely like the antithesis of everything that Burke believes in. You also remember that it's Tiffany Thiessen who even said, well, you should get him out of jail in the first place. Like, it's even this thing of like, my wife was right, like, I couldn't have done this without you, but I couldn't see it, and now you are proving her point and me wrong every step of the way, and it's only 24 hours, and like, what have I gotten myself into?
Am I crazy in thinking, like, remembering that in Catch Me If You Can there was also Tom Hanks's wife was also very much like, you say his name in your sleep more than you say mine.
Yeah,
kind of
thing. You're obsessed with
that. That was a theme in that that movie.
Yeah. It's such a, I don't know, it just felt very like, oh, I've seen this like 90 times before. Okay.
Let's talk about this show trying to pick up the stakes, because the way we watched it, right, the stakes, the peak of like this action that we're seeing is in the last 10 minutes of this pilot, right? We have two scenes. We get to see them assess someone at the airport, and there is a murder, most foul. Ooh. And also, we go to a museum where we find out the big twist, baby. I mean, Rich...
We're going to learn today, baby. Yeah, USA.
You're going to learn, and you're going to fucking like it. But I'm curious for the two of you, did these two scenes bring that little sense of action that maybe you needed to get a little bit more interested in what was happening? Rich, you were nodding your head, so I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, there has to be, and maybe this is our fault for only watching the first half of this pilot, but because there's like a lot of slow burns in this show. And the way that that Neil's character has immediately made himself useful in discovering that, number one, like, you know, he can identify where the thread from the bank explosion was from, that it was a security thread from the Canadian treasury that hadn't even been used yet. There is a they catch someone who is at the, like, trying to leave from JFK. Most of this show is centered around JFK, and the fact that there's a valet service at JFK. Anyways,
who's using that valet service?
Sorry to spoil all three of our wait a minute moments. But there is a, like, he's showing his value in the way that he is thinking with the mind of a criminal, which, you know, it's been done a lot before and stuff like that. But he is actually like, okay, this is the expertise. This is the competency porn that we want to see. We're piecing together clues from someone who would be the person perpetrating these crimes if it wasn't some other guy. So yeah, I mean, I did enjoy him like uncovering these like the clues of these Spanish copies, these Spanish 1944 copies of Snow White, and tracing it back to like. What I wouldn't think would be a very, like how much money could this possibly be worth? This like Spanish victory bond from 1944, but we'll like
have to find out in episode two.
Ah, damn! They don't even allude. They don't even allude in the script to how much it was possibly worth.
Wish we had a higher stakes villain plot than making forged Spanish victory bonds. I don't care how much money this guy's trying to steal from this, like how much embezzling's going on. I need at least 10 times more explosions. I need at least one more bank robbery. I need something that's a little cokier than what we're getting here, because right now I'm having to learn a lot in order to follow this plot.
Also, like, is it convertible to like Spanish pesetas, like before they joined the euro? Like what is this about? Does it have like does it have Franco's face on it? Like what are we doing here?
Well, I guess, Rich, the answer that you seek is in part two, because that is the end of part one of this pilot. But you know, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about Matt Bomer's cheekbones. We talked about
mostly that.
We talked about wearing fedoras. But I'm curious if there's anything that we didn't talk about.
We talked about his face. We talked about his hats. Now let's wrap up this podcast.
Is there anything that we didn't talk about this part one of this pilot that maybe you'd like to give a little bit more shine to? Max, what about you? Anything you want to give some shine to?
Man, I mean, shine is maybe a little bit of a stretch here, but this is maybe the most 2009 moment of everything we've discussed in this pilot so far, which is when they're introducing more of the team at JFK, and there's a woman on their FBI like task force squad, and they kind of imply that Matt Bomer might be sweet talking her a little bit, and they're like, you don't understand, she digs the hat. She'd rather be wearing the hat, and saying the line "she'd rather be wearing the hat" as a way of like queer coding a character.
It's so weird.
It's the most 2009 line imaginable. I was just like, I was laughing and bewildered, but it's just to have like, yes, this is my thing I loved in a strange way, because I have something else I want to get to later. But yeah, it was such a bizarre choice, but like, I couldn't help but chuckle at it at the same time.
Oh, man. For me, there is the moment in the when Matt Bomer is back in jail and he is writing, he's doing the quintessential check marks for every day that he's been in prison thing. And he knocks over, he accidentally punches out the light in his cell. And there is the most perfectly timed, "Shut up, bitch," from one of the other prisoners. And it made me laugh so hard. And I just, like, whoever was the sound designer for that particular scene, a million Emmys, because I laughed real hard at that.
Yeah. From myself, I really did enjoy the... I really did enjoy that vintage store scene. Like, actually seeing someone, a con man, be a good con man. And maybe it is because, you know, I really do enjoy Catch Me If You Can. I do enjoy, like, stuff about con men and seeing them actually, like, be good at their jobs. That, to me, was the scene that sold this pilot, of the idea of, like, hey, this is what you're going to be seeing. You're going to be seeing Matt Bonner doing stuff, and, like, that actually allows him to get what he wants but also solve cases. That, to me, is super interesting. And I think, let's talk about wait a minute moments, and I'll start, because there were things that were definitely a little bit causes pause on this pilot.
Oh yeah, name one.
And I'm gonna talk about whoever applied that fake beard to Matt Bomer deserves to be fired. That is one of the worst beards I've ever seen in my fucking life. And there's a they have this there's a scene in the show where they show Matt Bomer the day that he shaved off the beard, and they have a fucking photo of him from, like, the front looking at him, and it looks as if someone shaved a pet and just were like, super glue it onto Matt's face, and, like, that is absolutely gonna do just good enough. And for the amount of money that they probably spent on this pilot, they could have spent $5 more at least on this beard. Rich, what about you? What's your wait a minute moment?
There's one particular scene when they're at the Ankle Monitor Motel, and Burke uses the phrase "cowboy up," which I have only heard in the context of the 2004 Boston Red Sox, and so congratulations to them. Congratulations to reversing the curse.
Rich, I'm going to give you a little fun fact about this show. What if I told you that Peter Burke's character was supposed to be a professional baseball player?
Come on.
Blew out his arm, or it's his knee or his arm, and he that's why he became a white collar unit.
This show was originally supposed to be Cheers, but the FBI.
All right, it's Sam Malone.
Okay,
I'm making
hot tub noises. Paint the scene.
Max, what about you? What wait a minute moment for you?
All right, rapid fire. That Tim Decay, the actor who plays Peter Burke, was Bizarro Jerry in two episodes of Seinfeld. That's number one. Number two, Peter Burke using the phrase, "You think so, Copernicus," with a straight face. Number three.
2009, baby.
That everything just feels a half beat too slow. These are long scenes. We are in single locations for minutes at a time. The sequence in which we find Neil in his old apartment with his wife now having cleared out and it's totally empty and he's sitting on the floor. That is a long scene between him and Burke. And yes, I am aware that USA does these mini movies. They're the last bastion of this thing that used to happen in, like, the 80s and early 90s with TV pilots. But this is long. This felt long. And the fact that we don't even establish what we're going after until the cut between parts one and two, I just think that this whole thing could have been trimmed down, even if it's not a TV hour, but you could have gotten this thing down a little bit.
There was that one scene where they were on the rooftop and Burke like, we sit with Burke while he eats an entire croissant and drinks an entire cup of coffee. And
multiple
I'm like,
people
this is like
get coffee in real topped time. Off.
In real
time. This is like a French art house film. Why are we watching this?
But we had to introduce the hot granddaughter in slow-mo, and she's walking for like at least 45 seconds to
it. It's a big roof.
That is another wait a minute moment. That low key, I was just like, we could have done this for five, like maybe 10, like, but they did it for like at least 30 seconds of her walking. And she walked so far, like they literally were like, oh yeah, she's 100 yards away. Start, like, let's start that slow-mo cam.
There is one moment where I was just trying to picture the editor for this show just like sitting on the floor crying with like a bunch of film reels like in their hands, like, how am I gonna supposed to make a cohesive TV show?
He was in the hot tub with Jeff Rich, like he was chilling out.
When she's walking in slow-mo across the rooftop, how badly do you think Easton wanted to put in those brassy horns from the scene of Caddyshack when the lifeguard's going up the ladder to do the high dive?
I will say that it's either those horns or he wanted to put doves flying back. It's fucking face off. Well, no in-flight questions this week, gentlemen. I actually have a question for our frequent flyers, which is, what would you put on that cassette tape when we're breaking out of prison with Neil Caffrey? And you can submit those to us at tvpilotslicense.com. If you have an in-flight question, though, you can go to tvpilotslicense.com. You can also leave us a text or shoot us a voicemail at 213-290-17.
Best thing that's ever happened to you financially. Go.
Easy. Sold my car on Carvana. Amazing offer.
Really? I hit 200 on the scratcher.
Did the scratcher come to your house and hand you a check?
No.
How many scratchers did you hit to get that? I hit a button on Carvana.com once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's like the lottery, except you always win.
Not like the lottery at all, actually.
Exactly. Inexplicably good. Offers worth bragging about. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
1-3. Let's talk a little bit about the history of this show. As we said, this was a one TV movie. So if you want to get the full experience of the pilot, you watch part one and part two right after. But history of this show, 6 seasons, 81 episodes, all of them were on USA Network. Let's play a game of how many times did this show switch time slots? Was it 2, 5, or 10?
Ooh. Oh, 10 feels like a USA special. I like 10.
Yeah, this was what, like 5 or 6 seasons? I'm going to say 10.
It was 10 times across 6 seasons.
That's brutal.
It averaged about 2 per season, which is, you know, a great way to get your audience to know where the fuck to find the show that they're watching.
Catch it if you can.
Yeah,
the
nice.
The premiere of this show got
we did
about,
it. Full circle, baby.
The premiere of the show got about 5.4 million viewers, which for USA is really, really solid. But by the 6th season, it only was able to retain about a quarter of its audience in total. Syndication for this show started in 2013, and the show was shown in over 35 different countries. Yes, there are DVDs, there are box sets, multiple box sets, including the Complete Collection. Get it? Con? Because Neil is a con. Yeah, Rich just decided to quit the podcast right there. As far as this show is in conversations for reboots that started in 2020, and Jeff Easton even has said, like, in 2024, said that they were working with the original remaining cast. It's going to be called White Collar Renaissance. And right now on IMDb, the pilot is up there, right? They are planning to release it this year, but it's looking like it is going to be a next year released.
Guys, did nobody see what just happened with Suits LA?
Yeah.
Let's talk about awards. 11 nominations, including a ton of People's Choice Awards, some NAACP Image Awards, Casting Awards, and Young Artist Awards. But the show won one and only one People's Choice Award. Matt Bomer won it. What do you think it was for?
Oh, I was expecting Matt Bomer to take home the NAACP Image Award.
I'm going to say the Golden Quaff, sponsored by Pantene.
Nice.
It was for favorite cable TV actor. Now, interestingly enough, this was in 2015, and he beat out Charlie Hunnam, Sean Bean, Eric Dane, and William H. Macy. So, like, a pretty decently stacked group of actors, when you all things said.
Wait, did you say People's Choice Awards?
Yes.
The same body that nominated Shasta McNasty for Best New Comedy?
But gentlemen, that is the history of this show. And now it is time for Rich's Game of the Week.
All right. Well, obviously, I got to go with a little bit of famous forgeries and some forgery trivia. Let's see if Matt Bomer can crack this one. All right. What are the most successful and well-executed forgeries took place in the art world, with one European man so perfectly replicating the works of this artist, he tricked experts and even sold a forgery to Hermann Goering, the architect of the Holocaust. Who is the original artist? Is that A, Henri Matisse, B, Johannes Vermeer, C, Pablo Picasso, D, George Seurat?
I'm going to say Matisse.
I'm going to say Seurat.
It is Vermeer. He is a Dutch man who, to the T, made forgeries of the Dutch masters so crazily that it fooled actual experts.
Did you say the Dutchman? Did we figure out who it is?
That was the Dutchman.
Peter, we got it. We got him.
All right, my second forgery question is here. One of the mental warfare operations during World War II was a method of spreading anti-Nazi propaganda by sending planes full of letters with forged stamps to bombed mail trucks. And in the confusion of trying to deliver the mail from the bombed mail trucks, essentially littering that area with letters with anti-Nazi propaganda, so they would be delivered as normal. The operation was named after what cereal? A, Cheerios, B, Frosted Flakes, C, Wheaties, D, Corn Flakes.
I can't believe it wasn't called Alphabets. That's really disappointing.
Alphabets?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to go with C, Wheaties.
Yeah, I eat your Wheaties, like, you know, start whatever their catchphrase is. Go for it, Rich. What is it?
It is D, Operation Cornflakes, which was also my stripper name in college.
Well, Rich, thank you so much for that game of the week. Our flight's coming to a land, and I have two questions for you, gentlemen. And the first question is sort of an interesting two-parter. One being based off of this, what we watched, the first 45 minutes of this pilot. Would you watch the second 45 minutes of it? Part two, do you think there's a version of this pilot that could have just been 45 minutes of the hour and a half? And then the second is, this is, Max, you even mentioned it, and Rich, you mentioned it as well. This is very much a family-friendly-ified version of a lot of stuff that we're seeing on TV, with a lot fewer explosions. You know, USA doesn't make TV original TV anymore.
The one explosion, they didn't die from it.
Yeah, exactly.
It just came out like a cartoon covered in ash.
Talk about a wait a minute moment. That guy's dead. But I guess, is there a place for family-friendlyified versions of some of the more intense action that we're expecting and we see on primetime television today? So, Rich, I'm going to have
those
you start
good questions. Number one, I'm going to say no, I am leaving intermission of this pilot. It should 100% be 45 minutes, because there's no reason we should have lasting shots of someone eating a croissant. And then when it comes to family-friendly like dramas and stuff like that, I think there's definitely a place for that. TV can't just be like, you know, I don't know. It just can't be all Ted Lasso all the time. It's you got to have some stuff that you can watch with your kids that's like engaging and exciting. And, you know, I watched a lot of 24 with my dad, so maybe a little less Islamophobic too.
Max, what about you?
I've got bad news about season 4 of Ted Lasso, bud.
Oh, no. Ted, let her play in the burka.
I'm with Rich. I went into this one with high hopes because I do like Matt Bomer a lot. I've heard a lot about this show over the years, but The first 45 didn't grab me the way I thought. I can't see the back half doing the same. This absolutely could have been a TV hour and gotten its point across. We've seen so many shows like this. Like, we talked about The Blacklist. We've done it on this podcast. That has so many reveals and so many twists, and they also have a beginning, middle, and end to its case while establishing all this exciting background info, and that's a TV hour. Being 90 minutes so that we could have 2 minutes of bodacious babes slow-mo walking in heels and bathrobes across rooftops is inexcusable. For the second part, I like when TV feels like TV. I like when things are a little bit saccharine. And I do think that while I really enjoyed The Blacklist, there's a lot of machine guns being fired at that pilot. And there's a lot of things that maybe don't make everyone want to sit down and watch it. The same way that maybe not everyone wants to sit down and watch the CBS FBI procedurals that are super, super violent these days. I think there can be a middle ground between things that are detective and actiony, but also aren't necessarily like blood and guts all the time. Just keep them to an hour. Just keep them to a TV hour.
Yeah. For myself, I'm going to go a little bit long on this, and I apologize, but this is the second time I have seen part one of this pilot.
Oh.
And the reason I say that is because I have watched it in its full, in the original intended TV movie version of it. And I think that cutting this into two parts does it a gigantic disservice. I think it is, and I absolutely agree, this could have been 45 minutes of TV and we would have been absolutely fine, because this is the second show in a row that we have done where this is the worst episode of this entire series because of how long it is.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful series. Having watched it, I've watched every single episode of this show. And like very recently too, like in the last year, I have watched
every
episode.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. Wait till you find out what happens in the end. There are banks. There are chutes. There are ladders. And
Ladders.
But I think there's a reason why we have moved away from this TV movie concept, because we just want to be in a world for 45 minutes with 15 minutes of advertising and be done with that world for now. We're seeing more of the return of the single episode a week because we enjoy that little bit of like, hey, let's take a break from this rather than binging it. And this felt like, oh, I'm going to have to binge this motherfucker? Like, absolutely not. That said, with the family-fied version of dramas, yeah, there has to be stuff for the entire family. I really enjoy the concept of being able to have an entire family sit down and enjoy something that isn't Bluey. That's not me hating on Bluey. That's just me saying that you need a little bit of diversity.
Guys, tune in for our pilot episode next week and it's Bluey.
I'll talk to you about Keepy Uppy.
Three dudes talking to you about the pilot of Bluey for an hour and a half.
It's brother, a 7-minute episode.
Yeah, exactly. We can do that.
I said what I said.
Four more episodes. It's going to be our first multi-episode episode. But gentlemen, that's our flight. And before we go, I want to make sure that folks can find you wherever you want to be found. So, Rich, where can folks find you?
You can find me shouting cowboy up to celebrate the 2004 Boston Red Sox. You can also find me on Instagram at Damn That's Rich. You can find original sketch comedy from Max and myself over on TikTok at Dadwagon Comedy.
Max?
You can catch me pitching TV shows from a hot tub and on all things social media at Maxwell Sig.
And you can find me in the hot tub with Jeff J. I'm Jeff G. And if you're looking for me on social media, you can find me at Run Jeff Run. If you're looking for the TV Pilot's License, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. Make sure to follow us on YouTube. Check out our socials. We are also on all of the ones that you probably are on as well. If you have a question for the show or maybe our next episode, you can go to tvpilotslicense.com. You can also leave us a text or shoot us a voicemail at 213-290-1713. make sure to watch out for some of the stuff that we have coming up. We always give sneak previews of episodes, and we take questions on Instagram as well. But with the plane landed and the seatbelt sign off, we look forward to flying the bright skies of the TV world with you again soon. Until next time, keep your eyes on the skies and your fingers on the dial.
Shut up, bitch!
All right. Excellent.
Best thing that's ever happened to you financially. Go.
Easy. Sold my car on Carvana. Amazing offer.
Really? I hit 200 on the scratcher.
Did the scratcher come to your house and hand you a check?
No.
How many scratchers did you hit to get that? I hit a button on Carvana.com once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's like the lottery, except you always win.
Not like the lottery at all, actually.
Exactly. Inexplicably good. Offers worth bragging about. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.